Hello, good morning and welcome to Taking Care of Business. I'm Jackie Mitchell. Today's show, we explore career development and the trends to help us predict the future. Today's show is made possible by our friends at eView Real Estate. Business is going through unprecedented change. Those that listen regularly would hear me bang on about that, but it's a fact, and it's something we need to continue talking about. But many businesses continue to apply the same rewards, the same structures and incentives to their employees. For companies to keep up, they need to get creative in dealing with the new generation. And the expert on generational differences is Australia's leading social researcher, Mark McCrindle. Good morning.
Good morning, Jackie.
How are the generations different in how they want to work, and what are their expectations?
Well, we've got a new generation that have been shaped in this era of massive change. Obviously, technology, but a lot more of an entrepreneurial era. They're a bit more empowered. You know, they've seen a lot of people do startup businesses. They're in a world of teleworking where work doesn't just have to take place in an office, and being employed doesn't just have to mean having a traditional job. It can mean, you know, running your own thing on the side. And of course, the leadership style they respond to has changed from, you know, the old autocratic style to one where they look for a bit more empowerment. So, yeah, very different because they've been shaped in very different times to what we saw in the past.
And do pay incentives still work?
They do, and certainly, you know, remuneration matters because we're talking about jobs, not volunteer roles, so that's got to be right. And in fact, in a sense, there's a bit more transparency on that these days. You know, everyone can get onto the various jobs websites and type in their career or role or what they want and get a bit of a salary range. So there's even a bit more transparency around it these days. However, we have consistently found in our research that it is not the determining factor. Assuming the money is okay, and that's the goal, just take the money off the table, just deal with it, and then what's really going to make the difference in terms of both attracting talent and retaining key staff are the other things. It's the work-life balance. So do we provide flexibility? It's the workplace culture, so people feel included and connected. It's the leadership style, as we discussed. It's a broad job description. It's developing talent and keeping them interested. And, of course, it's training so that they remain relevant. So it's those factors, not purely remuneration, that drive retention.
Do you find, Mark, in your experience and in your research, that there's an enormous gap between the employers, which are normally Gen X or even baby boomers still, and they're employing these Gen Y and Gen Zs now that are coming into the workforce, that there is this huge gap regarding expectations?
Yeah, there is. And you know, it's not even about age. I mean, us Gen Xers don't feel that much older than some of those Gen Ys, but we were shaped in a different era. We started our careers when, you know, it was about the work ethic. It was about the respect for the authority. It was still that chain of command we fitted within, you know, the organisational chart and the command and control model. And so that's what we knew, that's what we submitted to, and that's perhaps what some Gen Xers have continued on in their leadership. But it has all changed. And so bridging that gap, understanding the new realities, that we've got very low unemployment rates. Young people have a lot of options. They look globally, not just locally. They can, if they don't like the job, they can move back and do study. You know, there's a lot more options. It's a lot more of an empowered workforce these days. And so, consequently, you know, employers have to adjust.
Yeah, it's almost a shift in power, hasn't it? It used to be the employers had the power; they could choose who they, you know, wanted to work for them. And now it's almost done a backflip, which is, I think, a really interesting insight, particularly for employers to take note of.
Exactly. Yeah, that's exactly right, Jackie. And even this conversation, you know, how can employers understand their employees? You would never have such a conversation in the bar.
True.
What do you mean we've got to understand our employees? They've got to do what we tell them, you know.
Yes, exactly. So it was a real sort of master-servant relationship, wasn't it?
Exactly. And, you know, but I think it's a healthy thing because, you know, what the best sort of leadership is leadership that empowers staff, leadership that has that attitude where they collaborate together. You know, we're in a world of flat structures, and if we just adopt the old style or even yearn for it, you know, why don't I just do what I tell them? Or why don't I just delegate? Why don't I just tell them how it's done and I'll get it done? Yes, there's great efficiency with that leadership model. There's not great effectiveness in terms of the buy-in, the ownership, the commitment. And the fact is that while the Gen Xer baby boomer has more experience and knows the lay of the land, is no doubt an expert in their field. We're not experts with the latest technology. We're not the world experts on the next generation. They are. And the younger generations can think with fresh eyes. They can solve problems in a new way. And that's why, you know, when we've got that generational diversity in the workplace, it actually brings about some more effective 21st century solutions.
Now, it's interesting. We started the conversation talking a little bit about entrepreneurs and the rise of the entrepreneurs, particularly amongst the millennials. But I also read somewhere that millennials like to work in groups where that has been a change. So entrepreneurs were usually individuals. Now they're choosing, or the Gen Z and Gen Y are choosing to form businesses with their friends or in groups. Have you found that?
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, the last few years has brought us a lot more of what we see around the place, these co-working spaces or startup hubs. And that's because back in the day, you know, us Gen Xers, boomers, we start a business, we either work from our spare room at home, or we maybe get a sublease somewhere and we start working away, and then we get an employee. We did it in that traditional way. These days, you've got young people with technology. They don't want to work isolated or from a library or in their spare room. They want to go to a co-working space. They want to get that energy, in a sense, from other entrepreneurs. They want to be able to have a collegiate discussion. Even if someone's working on a totally separate business, their own thing, it just does calm that energy and, indeed, that connection through the social interaction that can create a little bit of motivation. So it's a socially connected and more relationally driven generation of entrepreneurs.
It's almost Google had set the standard, even though, you know, with, I suppose, all their employees are considered entrepreneurs in their own right. You know, they'd have game rooms and job rotations on hierarchies as well.
Exactly. And a great point for us to think of, that even if we're employing people in a traditional sense, don't think of them as employees. Let's think of them as entrepreneurs that can add value, that can take a bit of ownership, that can share a bit of heart and soul and perhaps grow something and shape something, and to create that innovative environment, to create a culture of collaboration. We've got to sometimes provide the right space. Maybe it's you know, being a bit generous with what we stock in the lunchroom there, so people, if they want to come in a bit early or work through the lunch or just have a bit more of the social interaction, let's provide it. But it's also giving a bit more freedom. It's providing a bit of leadership to them. It's offering the right resourcing so that they can get the job done. In other words, it's moving away from that employer-employee relationship.
Yeah, it's interesting you talked about entrepreneurs. I think the term's intrapreneur, is that right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So they're inside an organisation, even though they're entrepreneurial in mindset.
Yeah, it's interesting. And also, looking at, you talked about shared workplaces and job sharing. What's your prediction for the sort of the next 10 to 20 years? So when the Gen Ys start becoming, you know, more senior and running their own business and things, how are things going to change or not?
Oh, I think the trends that we're seeing now will continue, and perhaps the pace will even speed up. You know, we're living in a world of disruption where nothing is certain these days, and where if there's not an external disruption, best to perhaps disrupt ourselves so that we don't get caught out. So I think this non-stop quest for improvement and innovation and adaption is going to be important for us all. I think it's making sure that we look at those big trends, those external trends, and we respond. I think the future is going to hold not only disruption and change, but also we've got to keep in mind that the time is human need. So if we think that, wow, in this world of technology, maybe all our staff can telework, they can work from home, we can, you know, downgrade the office, and we can have training through webinar, and that's, of course, possible, and a bit of that is great. But we still have a need as humans to connect, to interact, to physically gather, and to share a bit of a vision and goals and chat together. And so the future, like the past, will be still people gathering together and interacting. In fact, there's more of a reason to do that now, because people don't know their neighbours as much. People move more frequently and aren't connected in community organisations. People perhaps aren't part of the local church or not having their own family till later. So we're not as connected in those other social hubs, but the workplace is one social bottleneck through which most people do pass, and the future is going to require employers to really provide that environment that can bring about good collaboration, but also, you know, outcomes from that, but social interaction from that.
Always a fascinating discussion with you, Mark McCrindle. Really appreciate your time this morning. Thank you.
Oh, thanks so much, Jackie.
Great. Look forward to our next chat. Hope you're enjoying Taking Care of Business and learning a few tips. Hope you're enjoying taking care of business and learning a few tips. We're talking about job sharing and shared workplaces as one of the key trends. And I want to delve a bit deeper into that trend because I think that's a real key future development for business owners, whether that you're running a small business, a medium-sized business, or a large corporate business. I think that's something that I really want to explore, and our next guest is going to help me do that. She is the founder of One Job, Two Minds, which is Australia's first job share recruitment and coaching agency, providing companies access to the broadest talent in the country and giving employees a more flexible option while supporting their career development. Andy Friedman, welcome to Taking Care of Business.
Thanks, Jackie. Lovely to be here.
Good to have you here. Now, I read quite a surprising statistic that just recently it was reported that part-time employment fell by 15,400. And that's a concerning drop for executive-level candidates looking for flexible working solutions while maintaining career progression. So tell me a little bit about your business, One Job, Two Minds.
Sure. Well, as you mentioned, we're a job share recruitment and job share coaching business. And we're all about helping organisations to facilitate flexible work options for staff. Mm-hmm. And I guess we exist for three key reasons to help businesses solve three key problems, which is helping organisations to retain and engage top talent.
Yeah.
Enabling organisations to support women to reach senior leadership positions.
Okay.
And also to assist employees in creating pathways to achieve greater balance and fulfilment in their lives.
It's interesting. I know that you were listening to the interview with Mark McCrindle just before on the other side of that break. What were some of the points that he made that is particularly relevant to what you're doing right now?
Well, he mentioned he mentioned a lot about diversity,
yes,
for example,
yeah,
first of all.
Yeah.
And diversity is so critical for organisations because innovation is key. Organisations that aren't innovating are not going to get that competitive edge.
Mm.
And organisations that are not diverse, again, will not gain that competitive edge. It's been proven time and time again that greater diversity helps organisations' bottom lines. And we see more and more organisations now with fantastic gender targets, even boards with their 30% gender target, because they understand that share prices are known to rise as a result of greater diversity.
Okay, and so I know one of you said was supporting women. Is that improving, or is it pretty static? Or in your view, how's that going as far as women's, I suppose, presence? And you're talking about at senior level.
Senior leadership position, yeah. Well, organisations are saying the right things.
That's a big sigh, Andy. That was a big sigh. So it's still not
so disappointing,
yeah,
because one of the reasons I started One Job, Two Minds is because I have hundreds, throughout my career, I've had hundreds of women calling me, asking me for part-time roles, and organisations, they just don't have the insight to create meaningful part-time roles, which is why I feel so passionate about job sharing, because I believe it is a real opportunity, a tangible way for organisations to retain their women so that they reach senior leadership positions. Because for me, that is one of the keys, that participation. So it's participation of women in the workforce, but it actually goes beyond that to participation in meaningful roles where they are continuing on that career trajectory. Because a lot of women are so grateful that their organisation has provided them a part-time role. However, they're compromising on remuneration a lot. They're compromising on seniority, and they make compromises on job fulfillment in order to get that part-time role, which works in the short term, but long term, it doesn't become a viable option for them, and it's not worthwhile for them to remain in the workforce, which is why we see a lot of dropout of women,
right,
and we're not seeing them continue to those senior leadership positions.
And is that because of family commitments, having children? Is that the main reason?
I think the career break is a key reason that inhibits women to get to those senior leadership positions. But I think more than that, it's how organisations integrate them back into the workforce and create meaningful part-time roles for them to make it worth their while to come back and facilitate flexible working options. And I know Mark mentioned that a little bit, flexibility. And obviously technology is great in that it has enabled greater flexibility. what job sharing does is it is true flexibility, because when you are not in the office, your work is continuing to be completed by your job share partner. And when you're not in the office, you're not stressed about, you know, your manager looking for you, your clients looking for you, your work not getting done, your stakeholders not being satisfied, because you've got that partner there that is, you know, continuing with all of that.
Yeah, back to the women, I always find that an interesting discussion. I sort of think to myself, part of me thinks if they were awesome at their job, then the company will do anything to keep them on. So it's, you know, it's the best person for the job regardless of gender. Yet I get, my other half of me is I get conflicting information on that, saying, yeah, they are awesome, but the company's so inflexible that they sort of cut their nose off to spite their face. What's your view from that?
I absolutely agree. I think women who have reached senior leadership positions, I might be saying something controversial.
Please do.
I met with the COO a few weeks ago, and she just said to me, you know what, Andy, I'm sick of working like a bloke and I've had enough. And I think in order for women to reach these senior leadership positions, we need to change the way work is done. And for me and my experience, my research, it is about flexibility, and it's true flexibility. So it's not about being seen. It's about being measured by the product of your work and by you delivering on your role.
So when she said, I'm sick of working like a bloke, what does that mean? What does working like a bloke mean?
It means being in the office. It's about hours as opposed to productivity.
About output. I've actually, from other experts, have said now, particularly with the new generation, the Gen Z and Gen Y, or the millennials, yes, as they're collectively called, they are now very much working on their output. So they're saying, okay, give me the targets that you want to read, give me the outcomes, and this is, you need to finish this. This is the these are the projects. Here's the deadline. Here's the outcomes. Off you go. So how you go about delivering those, you know, whether it's they're seen or not seen, as long as they're delivering the expected outcomes by the deadline, they work really well. But
totally.
You're saying the when you mentioned working like a bloke, I suppose it's the old-fashioned, the Gen X sort of turning up at 7 a.m. and in the office for 12 hours.
And being seen. And interestingly, you mentioned the millennials, because they're absolutely a target for job sharing. You know, they're the group that companies are scrambling to attract. Mm. But once they've attracted them, they're scrambling to retain them, because this is the group that's most dissatisfied. They want work that's flexible, flexibility in where and when and how they work. And these guys are really seeking to manage their work-life demands better.
Yeah, so let's talk a bit more about job sharing. What is it? Like, let's get right down to basics. Does that mean you've actually got you're having someone else the two of you are doing the same job, or is there five people doing the same job? How does it work?
Well, it can work in many ways, and there's flexibility has so many different meanings. But from a job share perspective, the most common form of job share is where two individuals share a job. Mm-hmm. And you can there's elements within that. So you might be a pure job share where you absolutely share everything. Mm-hmm. It might be a job split where you split the roles and responsibilities in half, but you cover each other and you have an idea of what the other person is doing. Or it might be a hybrid job share where you each have your own areas of accountability and responsibility, and then you have joint areas of responsibility. So, for example, you might share the team leadership responsibility, mm-hmm, but have different areas of responsibility outside of that.
How common is it for companies to job share, or is it so still new that only like 1%, it's so innovative, or is it something that companies have been doing for a while?
There are pockets of job sharing, mm, and certainly it is more progressed in other parts of the world. And I think that it is a trend. It will increase because it has to. The way we work has to change. And if we want to retain our amazing women, mm, and there are other reasons for job sharing, mm, which I'll go into later, but if we want to retain our women to get them to these senior leadership positions, we need to be able to create ways. And for me, for individuals that want to work 3 days a week, mm, job sharing is the answer, because you simply cannot do a senior role 3 days a week. It's impossible. You're not going to do it justice. No one's going to be happy. And it's not fair on the organisation. So in order to do a really senior role part-time, job sharing is the answer. I was in Sydney a few weeks ago and I met a dynamic CEO duo, job share duo.
Wow.
And they've been job sharing for a number of years over a number of roles over a few organisations. Oh. And they're at a stage now where their children are older, they're at university, but they simply love job sharing and working together, and they believe that they are better together than individually. And, you know, now, as I mentioned, they're CEOs and, you know, they're pursuing study and other passions and interests on the side.
That's really interesting, because Mark McCrindle we were talking about how millennials like to work in groups, which is a trend about working together. They're not that keen on working on their own. And this is consistent. That finding is consistent
with
what you're talking about with job share. Now, has there been any research or any evidence to demonstrate there has been an increase in productivity with job sharing?
There's been a lot of research that's happened, unfortunately not in Australia, and you know, I'm in this for the long haul, so over the years I will, you know, conduct my own research, but there's been a 30% increase found in productivity. And I think there are a few reasons for that, Jackie. One of them is that when you're working 3 days a week, you come to work, you're refreshed, you're energized, you're gung-ho, you're focused, you know what you need to achieve. And so there's that productivity in the increased focus. There's also productivity because you've got someone that you're problem solving with.
Two minds.
You've got two minds in one job.
Yeah.
And you and I both know, Jackie, when we're not at work, you know, if we're walking our kids to the park or walking our dogs, we're still thinking about work. We're processing work. That's where we get our insights and our aha moments, you know, for those of us interested in neuroscience. It's when we're not in the office.
Yeah.
You know, it's not in the brainstorming session that, you know, you're doing in the boardroom. It's when you leave the boardroom.
Yeah.
And so these people come back and they've had time to process and they've got these insights. But productivity also in terms of continuity. So if you think of the average person taking 4 weeks of annual leave, for example, they're out of the office for 4 weeks. In the case of job sharing, you have continuity because that job share partner is still in the office. Not 5 days a week, it's 3 days a week.
Yeah.
You might be able to negotiate 5 days a week, but let's call it 3 days a week that they're in the office. So you're not losing productivity if the other one's sick. You know, you've still got someone there a few days a week. And we all go through ups and downs in life. We have days where we feel off or weeks where we've got personal stuff going on. Intuitively, job sharers all report that they know when their job share partner needs a bit of extra support, and they simply step up and they assist. And quite frankly, I think 30% isn't quite right. I think it's probably higher in terms of the productivity.
Is that 30% from the US, I predict?
From the UK.
From the UK.
Yeah.
Okay. You might need to talk to Mark McCrindle about engaging some research into this area.
Sounds good, Mark.
Moving forward from there. Job shares, it's a concept that I'm not overly familiar with because I've never done it before or been in a business that has it. So how do you then convince businesses to do it?
Yeah. Well,
I mean, really, how do you sell the concept to corporate or even small to medium-sized businesses?
Well, it's a slightly different sell probably to the smaller businesses because, in fact, it's more compelling. It's compelling for all business, but for smaller business, when you can get two minds in the one job, what you have is differences in skill sets that you can combine in that one person. So the whole is certainly greater than the sum of its parts in job sharing. So you have, you know, two sets of skills, two sets of experience, two sets of networks coming together. So really accessing two minds for one job. It's about employer retention. Mark touched on this before. You know, there's no such thing as lifetime employees anymore, lifetime roles. We need to, organisations that want to succeed and retain their high performers need, you know, that they need to find ways to retain them, and then they need to be thinking about that. So it is that retention, it is that engagement. They might not take up job sharing as an option, but they know it's there for them. And wellness is absolutely critical these days in maintaining and retaining staff.
So, can Can you hold that thought? Because I'd like to continue that discussion. Can you stick around for the rest of the show?
Love to.
Oh, great. That'd be wonderful. We are talking with Andy Friedman about career developments and trends. She's from One Job, Two Minds. I like the way that you keep referring back to your brand name. It's very impressive. I like that very much. We hope you're enjoying eavesdropping on our interesting conversation. We hope you are learning a lot as we're talking about trends in career development. Hope you're enjoying taking care of business and learning a few tips. An organisation that sees a wide cross-section of businesses is the Australian Institute of Management, or as we refer to them as AIM. Margot Smith from AIM, welcome to Taking Care of Business.
Thank you, Jackie. Great to be here.
Good to have you with us. Now, AIM does see a wide cross-section of different businesses. So what changes in career development has AIM seen in recent times?
I think it's changes in what we do. It's fair to say that in recent times and going forward, we'll see a lot of changes in what we do and how we do it. You know, we talk about there's 40% of the workforce that will face the high probability of being replaced by computers in the next 10 to 15 years. And if we reflect on the last 10 to 15 years, we would have been much of the same. So I think we just need to prepare to be more flexible and think about our careers, that, you know, being open to that change and what that with what that comes.
Yeah, flexibility is a key theme on today's show. And someone said to me a couple of weeks ago a phrase that resonated. They said, you have to be comfortable with being uncomfortable because of all the changes. So in your experience, how are the generations differing in their needs now?
I think, you know, increasingly we're seeing people who are seeking a lot more purpose in terms of the why and how they're challenged. Like you say, you know, comfort zone is you're not challenging yourself unless you're outside of that comfort zone. And, you know, potentially younger generations are more uncomfortable with that because they've seen a more constant disruption. But that's not always the case. So, you know, sometimes it is generational. I mean, there's the days of the gold watcher, you know, seem like they're long gone and less people are clocking up long service leave. So I think people are just more thoughtful about how they spend their time because it's so precious and aligning it to values. And maybe it's a generational thing, maybe it's not, but I think younger generations may have been perceived to be more adaptive in these disruptive times because they've emerged with these sorts of technology disruptions.
Yeah, so that's a really good point. So with the Gen Xers who are still very much active in the workforce, I'm one of them, and also even the baby boomers. So what advice could you give to our generation is how to be more flexible and how to be comfortable with being uncomfortable with all this disruption, because it's not easy.
Yeah, I think it's just being open to opportunities. And I mean, sometimes people talk about reverse mentoring, which is, you know, being mentored by someone who may technically be less experienced than you, but more experienced in a particular thing. So if it's social media or, you know, technology or thinking, just different ways of thinking, then it's being open to that and probably aware enough that might be a development area for you. So, yeah, I think that having an open mind and seeing your networks, like having a diverse range of networks that you can draw on that are multi-generational and multidisciplinary and all of those sorts of things.
Actually, that is a great point, because we tend to sort of always hang around our tribe, don't we? We sort of tend to hang around, you know, we go to work and we speak to the same sort of people every day, and friends are the same. Yeah. So it's stretching yourself, and most people have, if they don't have teenage children or younger children, or at least nieces or nephews or someone in their late teens, early to mid-20s, for that reverse mentoring, I think that's a really good tip.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, when we talk about, you know, the jobs of the future and that you know, many of those may be replaced, the one thing that can't be replaced is that creativity and innovation. So, you know, if you've got a diverse network, whether they're age or multidisciplinary, multicultural, whatever, then it ensures that you're tapping into as much of a diverse knowledge bank as you can.
Yeah, what sort of careers do you see growing in the next few years? And we talk about the future, and there's always a bit of a, well, is that 5 years, 10 years, 50 years? So let's go back to say the next few years. Is there any type of careers that you see growing?
Look, we've certainly seen we do a national salary survey, and we've certainly seen that you know careers with those developments in technology and increase in social media in the business and all of those sorts of things. We have seen an increase in demand. And salaries for jobs in those areas. But as I said, you know, sometimes it's just as much about the way you approach your role with creative thinking and innovation as anything else, and that will remain in high demand.
Because AIM does provide a lot of training for a variety of different industries. Has there been a certain increase in certain in areas of training needs, that certain types of training that are becoming more popular than others?
Yeah, so we have, I mean, certainly leadership capability and resilience and those sorts of skills are always in high demand, but probably never more so when you're doing more with less. So some of that leadership capability training has certainly seen an increase, and I think will continue to do so.
And you've just recently held some awards. Just tell us a little bit about those.
Yeah, so we've held the AIM Leadership Excellence Awards. So we had over 1,000 people who were nominated, and we held the finals in Brisbane just last week. So over six categories, ranging from a leader manager category right through to student and community leaders.
And did you find any sort of common threads with all the winners, or has there been a shift, or is there a particular trend with what makes someone a winner or not?
Look, I think it's fair to say a lot of the nominees were from such a diverse range of you know, organisational types and skill bases. The trend, I mean, in terms of the recognition of those diverse skills, it's such a humbling experience. So no trends per se, some really wonderful causes out there, especially in that we had a not-for-profit and community category. But, I mean, something we have been talking about a lot lately is the, you know, self-awareness and emotional intelligence in the workplace. And, you know, coupled with what we were talking about before, which was that flexibility and agility and innovation in the age of disruption. So I think it's fair to say that, you know, emotionally intelligent and self-aware leaders have, you know, a bit of an edge. And so that's something we've certainly been talking about a lot lately here at AIM.
I'm pleased to hear that. Do you come across anything about job sharing? We had a conversation earlier. We have here Andy Friedman from a company called One Job, Two Minds as a guest in the studio, and we were talking about job sharing and the rise of that as a trend. Have you had any experience in that area?
Certainly we see a fair amount of job sharing, and I think that's where organisations probably do need to be a bit more flexible, because with an ageing population and women returning to the workforce after having children and all of those sorts of dynamics. And I think it's important that organisations are flexible to encourage a variety of you know, roles and people at ages and stages. And again, it comes back to that innovation and diversity to make sure that you're getting the most out of your people, and that they're getting the most out of the workplace and contributing in a way that suits them.
Margot, it's Andy. I agree with you that today we're seeking, individuals are seeking more and more purpose, and they're seeking to work around their life, not live around their work. And individuals are aligning their work to their values and, you know, wanting that flexibility and balance that you've talked about, wanting to balance their career, which is really important to them, but also wanting flexibility and wanting to pursue other passions. So it's interesting that you've seen a rise in job sharing as well.
Yeah, I think particularly, I mean, when we're talking, like you see, we're in the age of disruption as we've been talking about, and you've seen the emergence of, or it was probably always there, it was just called something different, but social enterprises and co-working spaces and everything. And I think, you know, there's talk of portfolio careers, and so people may have, you know, different jobs to satisfy different objectives, and, you know, some of that might be, you know, more purpose-led, yeah, I think certainly there'll be job sharing as part of that, and purpose is a very large part of that, I think, as well.
I think
that's transitioning in and out of the workforce.
Yeah, I think that idea of purpose is also a key trend moving forward, particularly for the generations coming through, the Gen Z and Gen Y. They feel much more engaged with a company if they feel that they're working for a purpose rather than just looking about their bank account growing. I think that's been a real key as well. Margot Smith from the Australian Institute of Management, we really appreciate your time and your insights today on taking care of business.
Thank you so much.
I look forward to our next chat.
Great.
Thank you. Listen, smarter, not harder. You're listening to Taking Care of Business exclusively here on RPPFM. We are changing lives here at RPPFM here on Taking Care of Business, particularly if you're interested in your career and developing your career or changing your career. And we have a guest here in the studio, Andy Friedman, who was the founder of Australia's first job share recruitment and coaching agency, One Job, Two Minds. Welcome back, Andy.
Thanks, Jackie.
That was interesting what Margot was saying from the Australian Institute of Management. And it's consistent with what Mark's saying, what she's saying. So there are some key trends that I think shouldn't be ignored of what's happening. But I want to talk a little bit more about you, because this business that you've started, is that your first business?
It is.
Oh, and it only started recently?
Yeah, just a couple of months ago.
Oh, okay.
So
right.
Very new.
Now, what made you, first question, obvious, what made you start your own business?
Well, I say I'm quite blessed, because I was in a role that I really enjoyed, but my mind was saying one thing and my heart was saying another thing, and I knew that I wanted to pursue other things, but I wasn't listening to my heart, and I actually became ill. I, you know, was trying to manage a full-time role over in part-time hours and managing three kids and everything else that we have in life, and I became ill, which made me stop and take stock of my life and what it was that is important to me and what I wanted to achieve. And the idea of One Job, Two Minds came to me because I'm just so passionate about enabling individuals to create pathways where they can have fulfilling careers, but also have balance and have time to pursue other passions and other things that are important to them. And this doesn't apply to everyone. Some people want to work 5 days a week and 60 hours, and that's fine. But for those who do want to create more balance and kind of, work around their life rather than live around their work, then I just wanted to create pathways and build awareness within corporates that there are other options, and just for them to gain some insight into other ways to do things, new ways, which, will enable this kind of living and working, work-life fit, I think, is the new term. And as part of that, as a woman, I'm really passionate about finding ways for other women to create this kind of flexibility and balance. And as I touched on before, you know, the amount of women that there's an amazing brains trust of talent out there, men and women, who have decided that they only want to work 3 days a week. Mm. And, you know, we haven't touched on this, the ability for organisations to attract talent. What an area of talent to tap into, because, you know, these individuals are amazing.
So I just want to go back to you a little bit. Is that, how did you identify your passion? So you've clearly identified your passion to then go, okay, I'm going to start a business based on my passion, because you can see it and you can hear it in your voice. But you also wanted, one of the benefits of creating your own business was a bit more flexibility to fit in with your life. But how did you identify your passion? Because I find a lot of people struggle with that side of it.
It is absolutely a challenge. For me, it came with meditation, to be honest. Okay. I became the Vedic meditator a few years ago, and it's about, whatever your tool or methodology is, it's about stopping and living in the moment and really listening to what it is that is important to you. And for me, that silence and that opportunity came in meditation.
Okay, so that came to you. So then you've gone, okay, I'm going to start my own business. What's the first thing you did? Did you go and speak to your accountant? Did you get your pen and design a logo? What was your process?
My process was thinking through, what the idea is, how it works out, you know, what my methodology will be, what the, you know, how I thought about the monetization side of things.
Yeah.
And then my creative brain switched on. It was like, okay, you know, what will my brand be? What will my name be? What do I want to represent? What are my values? I know a couple of weeks ago you were talking about B Corp.
Yeah.
And I love B Corp. And so for me, I'd love to become a B Corp. Which I'll do in time, because it's all about purpose and mission and having values and you know, understanding what's important to you and then trying to live those out.
Which is the purpose that Margot Smith from AIM was talking about as well, a very
Absolutely.
Strong purpose. It's all about, I think purpose is the new vision or the new mission. It's all about purpose. How did you come up with your brand name? As a brand expert, I have to ask this question. Curious?
Well, my business is all about job sharing, as you know, and I just had to play around with what is job sharing and what is the key value that organisations and individuals get. You know, that the individuals that are job sharing gain as much value as the organisations get from that one job, and then two minds in that one job.
Okay, so the two minds is the benefit to the customer. I love that that's in – I actually got that in the brand name, and I like the fact that you can use it in conversation as well, so that's good for recall and for a bit of stickiness to remember what it is. So the one job, two minds, and it's really about the customer's benefit. I get frustrated when people come up with a brand name that means something to them but is very confusing for customers.
Yeah.
So, but I like the fact you've done that. When you were setting up the business, what help did you get? Like, who helped you along the way?
Well, one of my very close friends owns an agency called Kink mm-hmm. Marketing, and so he helped me bring that brand to life through a logo.
Okay, so and he helped you with the brand side of it.
Well, he sure did.
And did he help you with any other part of marketing of your business?
You know, we just nothing formally, but
just a bit of support
did talk
and mentoring.
Through, yeah, mentoring.
What about other part, the structure of your business and things like that?
My accountant.
Yeah.
So I got my accountant on board. Had a legal advisor as well.
Oh,
just,
good.
Just
okay.
To set things up for me.
Yeah.
So I started with a legal actually. Brand marketing, legal, accounting, and I'm really blessed to have a network of friends who. Entrepreneurs
okay,
have
so
started their own
into
business.
Your network. That's a key. That's not being blessed, Andy. That's being smart. That's actually going, I've got a network of, you've got your network, use them. And that's a consistent theme that I get from successful people is don't be afraid to ask. Because most people, successful people, are happy to help. They just, people get scared to ask them, so they don't get asked enough.
Yeah.
So I think that's really good.
And collaboration is key, and, you know, getting value from others and then giving them value in return.
Yeah. Or being appreciative of it. That's human
Absolutely.
Nature. You know, that's basic stuff, isn't it? Saying thank you, which is really good. So 2 months in, what's been the biggest challenge or the biggest surprise in the 2 months?
I've been overwhelmed by candidate support. So by candidates, I mean individuals that are approaching me that want to job share.
Mm.
And now my challenge is to, my opportunity is to build awareness in corporates and help them understand the benefits and, you know, run some great trials. So I've really enjoyed working with a number of organisations running job share coaching for them. So I recently rolled out job share coaching with Bupa, who are a very progressive organisation
yes.
all about wellness.
Yeah.
Just taking those learnings and building from that.
I think it's building
awareness.
It's an interesting concept, the job share coaching, because it's coaching but it's so niche. And I think that's a trend that people are wanting niche areas.
Well, the coaching is actually really important, Jackie, because so many organisations partner up individuals just because they're both available at the same time. But that doesn't mean that they're going to make a good partnership. And I think individuals need to be supported in the systems and the processes. And so what my coaching is all about is about merging them from I to we. So,
yeah.
Understanding values and...
Have you got, we like to sort of finish the show on a pearl of wisdom. Is there a phrase, a quote, a philosophy that you particularly love? Like some people have a sticky note on their computer that, you know, keeps them motivated each day.
Yeah.
Others read something yesterday that they, oh, that's interesting. Is there something that, that keeps you going?
There is actually. Mine is create the things you wish existed.
Did you create that yourself?
No.
Where was that from? Just read it somewhere?
I read it somewhere and it's just stuck. Good. And that's what good. I've done.
So do you have that written down anywhere or is it always just in your head?
I have a little card.
Ah.
And but it's just it's always in my mind.
Ah, and the card is in your wallet? How do you or is it?
It is actually.
Oh, there you go. So if you're feeling a bit flat, you can just pull that out and that sort of keeps you going.
It reminds me why I'm doing what I'm doing.
That's good. See, I love that. I love that. Indy Freeman, thank you so much for coming in and sharing your story and your business, One Job, Two Minds. We wish you all the very, very best. In 2 months into your business, I'm interested, after a year, will you come back and have a chat with us?
I would love to. Thank you so much for having me.
I'd love having you in the studio. I'd also like to thank Mark McCrindle, as always, our resident social researcher, and also Margot Smith from the Australian Institute of Management, as we talked about career development and career trends today and some real consistent themes and threads and lots of tips today. If you'd like more information, we will post that on our Facebook page. Well, we hope you've heard lots of advice and inspiration today and feel a little bit smarter. We look forward to your company next Friday at 11 a.m. In the meantime, keep taking care of your business.